Welcome to the NTEB Prophecy News Podcast with your host and Bible teacher, Jeffrey Greider. Rightly divided, dispensationally correct, and standing on the authority of the King James Holy Bible, this program is brought to you by NowTheEndBegins.com.
And good afternoon, everyone. And if you're in America, happy Labor Day to you on this Labor Day weekend. My name is Jeff Greider. I am the editor-in-chief of NowTheEndBegins.com. And today on the Prophecy News Podcast, we are looking at the revolution that has been decades in the making, building since 2016. And it is absolutely knocking at the door of the structure in which this country is based on and founded on. And the revolutionaries are angry and they're hungry and they are highly, highly funded. And they have made so much progress over the last 4 or 5 months. I went back into the podcast archives for this show just to see what I've been talking about lately. And it seems like every other show we're talking about the Antifa and Black Lives Matter movement, domestic terrorists, and all the nasty stuff that they've been doing. And we have to talk about this because people need to take it seriously. There's a lot of people in this country who just kind of roll their eyes and look the other way because it's not touching them where they live right now. And they have this false notion that they're safe. And if that's you, let me just tell you, you're not safe. And this country is literally on fire. It is literally burning. In 48 out of 50 major American cities, there's riots going on right now. They just declared in Portland yesterday, after 100 solid days of protests, they have finally said, okay, we need to declare this a riot. And they're about 97 days overdue for declaring the nonsense and the anarchist tyranny that's been happening in Portland as a riot, because that's what it was from the very beginning, and that's absolutely what it is right now. So let's go to the Lord in prayer and ask for his blessing on today's program. Heavenly Father, we thank you for your goodness and we thank you for your mercy. We thank you for every good thing that you give us, Lord. And Father, we just commit this time to you and we ask for your blessing. And we just commit this time to you, God, in Jesus' precious name. Amen. My daughter is just showing me a picture of me holding her at the age of, oh, I don't know, 6 months, 7 months, 8 months. She just FaceTimed me. And man, oh man, what a great picture that is. I love you, Kelsey.
I love you too.
Talk to you later. Okay, bye-bye. Always make time for your kids, even when you're doing a podcast. Time is precious and time is short. If you love somebody, tell them you love them. Love your kids, love your parents. Today's my mom's birthday. She would have been 92 years old today. And the Lord let me lead her to salvation just a few days before she passed away, back in April of 1998. Make time for your parents if you're a kid. And if you're a parent, make time for your kids. And you only have them for a short period of time. So love them as much as you can. And, all right, let's get on. I'm going to get all weepy-eyed and emotional, and we need to be talking about revolution right now. We need to be talking about what's happening with the Black Lives Matter and Antifa movement. So, I have a clip that I want you to hear. Some of you are going to be familiar with this person's name, Jordan Peterson. Some of you know exactly who he is. Some of you have no idea who Jordan Peterson is. Jordan Peterson is a professor at a university in Canada. And he's a liberal, okay? He's not a conservative. He's not a Republican. He's a liberal. But he's the classical type of liberal. And he's not a liberal by today's standards. Keep in mind that John F. Kennedy was a liberal But if John F. Kennedy was president today, if he was alive today, he would absolutely be considered a conservative Republican. That's how far the liberal end of the spectrum has shifted. So Jordan Peterson first came under attack 4 years ago because he dared to put forth the idea that people are created equal, but we are not equal as people. And what that means is everybody is equal when you start a race, and everybody should have the same benefits to get into that race, and everybody should have a equal position at the starting line. But as soon as that gun goes off and the race begins, people are not equal. And the person that wins the race is the fastest of the runners. And the winner is not equal to the loser. And in life, if you ever watch Shark Tank, you understand very, very clearly that even people with good ideas, you have to make it on your own. You have to be willing to stand up and fight for what you want. And you have to be able to stake your claim in the ground, even if everybody else thinks that your idea is a bad idea. Now, of course, I'm not talking about liberal politics. I'm talking about corporate ideas. I'm talking about capitalism. And any society that is not based economically on capitalism is a society that is a oppressive society, because people should be free to make their stuff, sell their stuff, and rise as high as they can rise based on their own ability. We call that a meritocracy, where people rise because they do well, and they go out of business because they do bad. And what socialism says is everybody stays in business, everybody serves the same type of product, nobody has a really hot thing to sell, everybody has to be equal. And it's a very, very terrible way to look at things. So I just want to play a little bit of this clip. Jordan Peterson in an interview with John Stossel, and they're talking about social justice warriors. Take a listen.
Yay! These young people say Jordan Peterson should not be allowed to speak on their campus. Peterson's a psychology professor at the University of Toronto. When Canada proposed a law declaring it illegal not to call someone by their preferred pronoun, in other words, illegal not to address those who don't want to be called he or she, as say, Z or Zim, Peterson said he would not obey that law.
Shame on you! Shame, shame, shame on you!
It's not just students who object. Hundreds of his colleagues signed a petition demanding that Peterson be fired. They say his behavior is a danger.
This is where we draw the line!
Now, when he tries to speak, protesters often surround him, blowing air horns or screaming to make sure others cannot hear him. At this school, he and students who wanted to hear him moved outside to escape the noise. But the protesters just followed him and drowned him out again.
Go home, Peterson!
Go home, Peterson!
Somebody wants to be called Z or Zer. Why not?
I don't care what people want to be called, that's fine, but that doesn't mean I should be compelled by law to call them that. The government has absolutely no business whatsoever, ever, governing the content of your voluntary speech.
But if I personally said I'd like you to call me Z or Zen...
We could have a conversation about that, just like I would if you asked me to use a nickname, for example. So, but there's a big difference between privately negotiated modes of address and legislatively demanded, compelled speech.
So that's Jordan Peterson talking about why he will not call transgender people by their preferred pronouns, because he does not want to be mandated which mode of speech he is compelled to use. And he raises a very, very good point. And we're starting with this today because in order for you to understand what's happening with the Black Lives Matter and Antifa riots, in order to understand it intellectually, Now, we understand it spiritually. We understand that this is the rising spirit of Antichrist. Absolutely. And we've talked about that on many, many, many programs. And we will talk about that a little bit today. But I want you to be able to understand where these movements have sprung up from an intellectual perspective. It started with the far left saying that you don't have a right to express your opinion and your belief the way that you see it and the way that you believe it. And here in America, the First Amendment is freedom of speech. And our Constitution says that the government cannot regulate your private speech. You cannot be told what to say and what to think. And the radical left movement, they want to overthrow that, and they want to absolutely tell you what you can think and what you can say, what is accepted speech and what is unaccepted speech. If you remember about 2 years ago, they started with these protests, they started creating what's called a free speech zone. So if I wanted to go to a Black Lives Matter riot and I wanted to stand up and say something in opposition to what they were saying, then I had to go and stand behind this little barrier with a sign that said free speech zone. Well, if my free speech is put into a zone, it's not free speech anymore. It's now regulated speech. And this is the argument that Jordan Peterson takes, that the main problem with the left, what's really at behind when you get past everything else that they claim to stand for, what they really want to do is they want to tell you what to think, they want to tell you what to believe, and they want to create a society just like George Orwell's 1984, where the government is telling you what is acceptable thought and what is unacceptable thought. And that's exactly what these battles being waged right now are attempting to accomplish.
Protesters call Peterson all sorts of names.
They've called me lots of things. Hitler, that was one. The fact that it has to do with transgender people is virtually irrelevant. The issue is compelled speech.
Peterson handles the protesters well. And you look pretty calm while they're screaming at you.
Yeah, well, you know, better to be calm.
Best to let the unreasonable opposition speak, because they manifest themselves as unreasonable. Yeah, and then everyone can see it.
You can also see it in this video, viewed millions of times. Maybe because Peterson stays calm while the TV host keeps twisting his words.
You're saying that women aren't intelligent enough to run these top companies?
No, I didn't say that at all.
He simply says that natural differences explain most of the gender wage gap.
Do you believe in equal pay?
Well, I made the argument there. It's like it depends on
who
defines it.
So you don't believe in equal pay?
No, I'm not saying that at all.
Like many on the left, she insists that difference proves discrimination. If it weren't for our sexist society, we'd be much more alike.
That's actually not the case. The science on that is absolutely clear. They've studied tens of thousands of people in dozens of countries, and the papers have been cited thousands of times.
For years, many leftists denied there were any differences.
Aren't women in general better nurturers?
No. Next question.
Feminist icon Gloria Steinem even objected to researching differences.
It's really the remnant of anti-American crazy thinking to do this kind of research.
But more research has been done, and it shows that on average, men and women excel at different things.
That runs contrary to the desires of the researchers who generated the data, because no one wanted that. It came as a shock to everyone, but that's how it is.
And yet when you say this, it infuriates some people.
It should infuriate them, because I'm going right after the heart of the radical leftist doctrine.
The heart of that doctrine is that all groups should have equal outcomes. There should be just as many female CEOs, scientists, computer programmers, because men and women are the same. If outcomes differ, it must be sexism.
So let me stop him right there. That is what the left wants to do. They don't want to control the start of the race. They want to control the end of the race. And that is socialism, communism, Marxism, whatever you want to call it. That's what they do. If you live in China, China has an economy that is controlled 100% by the government. If you are a manufacturer in China, you are only allowed to manufacture regulated, approved devices and components that have been approved by the communist government. And you have to sell them for the wage that they tell you you have to sell it at. And everything is set and everything is regulated. Now, Satman is asking me a question. Do I know how Tucker is getting away with what he says on his program when even the Fox News channel is corrupted? Tucker, I called him last week. Not, I didn't call him on the phone, but in an article, I called him last week the last truth teller. And the reason why I called Tucker the last truth teller is because at the level that Tucker Carlson is operating on, he is literally the last one who is making the most sense and telling the most truth. And Sean Hannity's a nice guy. I like Sean Hannity. But you can't compare the show that Sean Hannity does with the show that Tucker Carlson does. Tucker Carlson, if you watch him on a regular basis, Tucker Carlson absolutely goes for the throat. And he doesn't care which side of the fence he's going after. And he really appears to be going after the truth. And for the time being, that makes him controversial. So that means the ratings are very high. So even though the Fox News channel is run by liberals right now, they're not going to kick him off at the moment because he is currently the number one rated talk show on all of cable television. He beats everybody on CNN, MSNBC, ABC, NBC, CBS, NPR, MSNBC. Nobody beats Tucker on a regular basis. And the reason why people are tuning into Tucker is because he has the guts to tell the truth. And when something is really nasty and it's really scary and it's really stupid, he'll stand up. And it doesn't matter if it's something that happened on the Republican side or the Democratic side. He goes after Trump on a regular basis. And the things that he goes after Trump for, he's not necessarily wrong about. So because of that and because of the size of his audience, I call him the last truth teller. Just like when I talk about Now the End Begins, and I say that we are just about the only King James only, rightly dividing, dispensationally correct, doctrinally true website with this amount of traffic anywhere in the world. And I rack my brains trying to think of any other Bible-teaching, conservative news, Christian website that is King James only, that stands for biblical truth rightly divided, and is dispensationally correct. As far as I know, we're the only ones at this level. There's a lot of smaller sites that don't get nearly as much traffic, and because of that, they don't have nearly the influence that we do. Now, that's when I call Tucker the last truth teller. He's obviously not the last one telling truth on Fox News. You have Lou Dobbs, and he's pretty good, and Laura Ingraham. I don't really like her style, but she does some good things, and Jesse Waters is pretty good, and Greg Gutfeld is pretty good, but nobody with the audience that Tucker Carlson has at the top of the heap is telling the truth. He is the last one. And Fox will keep him on for as long as it makes them money. And that's what they're really all about, and they should be because they're a corporation. And I have no problem with that. But don't expect to see him on forever. If he keeps telling the truth at the level that he keeps telling the truth, and they've already been to his house, Black Lives Matter and Antifa has already been to his house. He's already been forced to move one time. He's already been forced to hire a security team. So keep Tucker Carlson in your prayers. Absolutely. This story here, speaking of Tucker Carlson, here is an article from the Daily Caller website, and that's a website that was started by Tucker Carlson. Many of you may not know that, but the website, The Daily Caller, was started by Tucker Carlson about 10 years ago. But listen to this article that they did today. Democratic Kansas House candidate admits to abusing ex-girlfriend, but says Medicaid for All could have stopped him. So listen to this insane liberal talk about how if we would have Medicaid for All, he wouldn't be abusing his girlfriend. Democratic Kansas State House candidate Aaron Coleman on Sunday admitted to abusing his ex-girlfriend and said in a statement that, quote, Medicaid for All, end quote, could have prevented his actions. We must strive. Now listen to this. This is the woman beater saying this. We must strive to create a society safe for women, which we currently do not do. Uh-huh. He choked and slapped her in December of last year. He physically beat her. He physically attacked her. And he said that he was mad that his ex-girlfriend would not agree to have a threesome with him. So he choked her, slapped her, beat her, and then when he got caught, he says this, we must pass Medicaid for All so people can receive counseling and mental health support based on need for treatment. The ex-girlfriend said, he jumped on top of me, put his hands around my throat, started squeezing and slapping me. Now, he was forced to drop out of his race for the Democratic Kansas State House seat, rightly so. But can you see the level of mental insanity that here you have this Democrat who beats his girlfriend? I mean, he beat her really badly. And then when he gets caught, he says, well, that wouldn't have happened if we have Medicaid for All, and that's why I'm a social justice warrior. Medicaid for All has nothing to do with whether or not somebody beats their significant other, whether it be male or female. That has nothing to do with any government program. That has to do with the fact that you're a sinner and you're, sounds like he's unsaved, and that's what unsaved people do. Lulu just said he's he sounds like he needs mental health help, and he does. But what I'm trying to show you is the irrationality of what the left is doing. It is not normal. It is not intellectual. It doesn't make sense what they're doing. Because when you get to the heart of their argument, like what Jordan Peterson was saying, what they really want to do is they want to be in a position when they can control what you think and what you say. Now, a really good example of that is Drew Brees. Do you remember a couple of months ago when Drew Brees, and he took this great stand, and he's a Christian, he takes this great stand for the American flag and the national anthem, and he said that he would not be associated with anybody who didn't respect our national anthem and respect our flag. And what a great statement that was that he made. And within 24 hours, he was on his knees with his wife, groveling, begging the Black Lives Matter people to forgive him for his statement. Now, what could cause such a radical change in 24 short hours? And what's so bad with saying that he didn't want to associate with people who disrespect our national anthem? Now, I don't want to associate with people who disrespect our national anthem. I don't want to associate with people who set the American flag on fire and run it over with their car and urinate and defecate on it and do all these nasty things. Now, we live in a country where we have freedom of speech, and if you want to burn the American flag, well, you have the right to do that. But I'm not going to associate with you. You and I have nothing in common. Now, that's exactly the position that Drew Brees took. And within 24 hours, he retracted everything that he said, and then he began to grovel and beg. And why would he do that? Because he realized that in order to stand up to the mob and to stand up for what's right, it's going to cost you something. And we were talking about this on last night's program, on the Bible study last night. When they come for you, what are you going to do? Are you going to stand and preach Jesus Christ? Are you going to tuck your tail between your legs and run the other way? That's the question that you have to answer, because guess what? They are going to come for you. That's a guarantee. And I'm looking in the chat room right now. I see David and Sherry, Victoria, Wayne, Carl, looking up, Satman. I see Donna. I see Lori, Jeanette. I see all the regulars. And guess what? They're coming for you. At some point, on some level, whether it's going to be a protest in the street, whether you're going to be trying to have a restaurant meal, and they're going to break into your restaurant and demand that you get up and leave the restaurant. Or maybe it's going to be a coworker, or maybe it's going to be your boss. I've shared the story many times that I was fired from 2 six-figure jobs because of Now the End Begins. And I didn't like that, and it made me homeless for a short period of time, and it was a real, real tough thing to go through. But guess what? God knew what I needed. I wouldn't trade a minute of that. Not one single minute of that. And I have a really, really good friend of mine, Brother Stephen, one of my street preachers, who said, hey, you can come live with me. And he let me live with him for 4 months, and he prevented me from falling through the cracks and having to go to a homeless shelter. And that was only 6 years ago. But that was part of the price that I had to pay if I'm going to be the editor-in-chief of NowTheEndBegins.com. And the question that I've been asking everybody who says that they're a Bible-believing Christian, and if you tell me that you're a born-again Bible-believing Christian, I'll take you at your word. I have no reason to doubt you unless you give me compelling reason to think otherwise. But if you tell me that you're a born-again Bible-believing Christian, I'm telling you, in the day and age that we live in this year in particular, they're going to come for you. Doesn't matter whether you're male or female. They're going to come for you. Doesn't matter whether you're a senior citizen or you're a teenager or somewhere in between. They're going to come for you. And you need to make peace with that thought right now, so that when they do come for you, you're going to stand up and do what? You're going to preach Jesus. That's what you're going to do. Just like the black street preacher in Charlotte, North Carolina. And he stood up and he said, Jesus saves! Jesus saves! And hundreds of Black Lives Matter terrorists surrounded him. And they covered him in flour, which is a very racist thing to do. Flour is white. He was a black man. But Black Lives Matter did it to him. And they surrounded him and they covered him in flour, which is not painful, but it's humiliating, very humiliating. Then they got cans of silly string and they sprayed it all over the top of his head. And all through having to be verbally accosted, listen to what they were, this is what they were saying to him while they were dumping flour on his head, and while they were spraying his head and his face with silly string, this is what they were shouting. So that's what they were saying to street preacher Sam Bathia in Charlotte, North Carolina on Saturday night. F Jesus, F your Jesus. That's what they were saying to this street preacher as they poured flour on his head and they covered him in silly string. They committed blasphemy to the Savior of the universe. Now, it gets even more disgusting when you realize that the very people who did this act to Sam Bathia, the street preacher, they were the Black Lives Matter rioters who were claiming to stand for racial injustice as they assaulted a black man preaching Jesus Christ. Wrap your head around that. Now do you see why I'm constantly talking about this subject? Because Black Lives Matter and Antifa, they have raised in the last 5 months, get ready for this, they have raised just under $1 billion with a B. LeBron James donated $100 million personally to groups controlled by Black Lives Matter. But worse than that, Black Lives Matter is funded by every major corporation in America, just about. And they have an endless supply of money. Can you imagine how much damage that if you were a domestic terrorist and I gave you $500,000, you could do some pretty good damage with $500,000. But then let's just say that you spend that $500,000 and then I give you $5 million. Man, oh man, you could do damage on a whole different level if you were a domestic terrorist and you had $5 million. And then what if I gave you $500 million? How much damage could you do? Now double that, and that's how much funding Black Lives Matter and Antifa and related groups have received in the last 20 weeks of 2020. And that's why they're everywhere. That's why these buses show up in major cities. I have seen the buses with my own eyes. Don't let anybody tell you that that's not true. I have seen it 3 years in a row here in St. Augustine, Florida, when we have, and I've spoken about this before, we have our holiday light show called Nights of Lights, and it was rated 2 years ago by National Geographic as one of the top 10 light shows for the holiday in the entire world. And people come from all over the globe to see the opening night of our Nights of Lights. And for the last 3 years in a row, I have been standing there celebrating the holidays with the most amazingly diverse group of people. If you were to come to our Nights of Lights shows, we probably won't even have one this year with this COVID nonsense, but if you would have been to the one last year, you know what you would have seen? You would have seen 15,000 people in downtown St. Augustine, Florida. And they would have been gay and straight. They would have been black and white. They would have been kids in strollers, teenagers on skateboards. They were Indian. They were Jamaican. They were African. They were American. They were Irish, German, Caucasian, Filipino, mixed race. And everybody swaying back and forth, singing not holiday songs, but Christmas carols. Joy to the World, a little town of Bethlehem. 15,000 people in perfect peace and perfect harmony. The cops are standing around just drinking coffee because there's no real problem. And everybody's relaxed. And everybody's different. And it was literally like being in a global festival. There were so many different types of people there. Nobody was offended by Christmas carols. Nobody was offended by singing Joy to the World, talking about the birth of Jesus Christ. And then the buses pulled up. One bus, two bus, three bus. Buses hauled what, 70, 80, 90 people? These people began to stream off the bus. And from the second that they set their foot on the ground, they were carrying signs saying, America KKK, and St. Augustine is the most racist city in America. And these agitators, they tried to hijack the entire thing, and the police had to keep them back. Now, that's what they do in every city across America. They go into gatherings where people are calm and peaceful and happy. Portland, Oregon, 15, 20 years ago, was one of the culinary capitals of America. They had so much going on in terms of food and coffee and technology, and it was a very trendy place, and it was a hipster place, and it was a very, very thriving economy. Not now, though. In 2020, Portland, Oregon is a crap hole. It is a third world crap hole where almost every single major business in downtown Portland is covered up with plywood. Homeless everywhere. Junkies shooting up in the street. People defecating on city sidewalks. And that's replicated in Austin, Texas, Seattle, Washington, New York City. Have you gone to Google or YouTube? Have you seen the videos of what downtown New York City, the financial capital of the world, looks like today? It would bring tears to your eyes if you were to see that. And that's exactly everywhere these people go. They bring horror and poverty and misery. And the ironic part is they do this while claiming to be standing for freedom and justice and liberty. There could be no more ironic statement than for anybody in Black Lives Matter or Antifa to say that they stand up for justice, freedom, and liberty. They are the oppressors, is what they are. And they are doing it because they are trying to collapse the American system. Listen to this. This clip from yesterday. And that's about all we're going to listen to of that. But basically, if you were to watch that video, you would see Black Lives Matter surrounding non-black people just trying to walk down the street, just trying to shop in a store, just trying to purchase a cup of coffee at a coffee shop. And that's what they're doing in every city across America. So we have told you for a long time now about the coming civil war, and that civil war is actually here, and it is being waged in every major city in America right now, and has been going on for the past 100 days, 150 days. And it's been going on for a long time. And when we first started Now the End Begins, we warned you. We warned you that this type of day was going to come. Now, I thought that it would happen under Barack Obama, and it got pretty close. It started to move in that direction very, very strongly, but then they mistakenly thought that they were going to be able to just pass the baton to Crooked Hillary, and they would have a continuation of power. But this is what I wrote, and I'm going to put this into the chat room. This was the original banner graphic. Take a look at that. That's the original banner graphic for Now the End Begins, and that's from February 25th of 2010. But look at what I wrote in the bottom left-hand corner. And I wrote this, and you can go to the Wayback Machine, that's web.archive.org, and just type in nowtheendbegins.com and go to the very first screen grab that they ever did. And that's where I got that picture from just now. And you will see what I wrote in the bottom left-hand corner of that graphic. I wrote, "The Coming Betrayal of America. For generations, the Bible has warned of the coming end of days, and you are now living in that time." I said this 10 years ago. "America, a nation raised up by the hand of God to spread the gospel and to be a beacon of freedom for people around the world, is about to be forever silenced by those sworn to protect her, her leaders." And that's exactly in 2020. That's what we see, is that the people who want to lead this country are in favor of the Black Lives Matter riots. Listen to this from Democratic vice presidential candidate Kamala Harris back in June of this year, speaking with Stephen Colbert, warning us, threatening us that the riots are never going to stop. Take a listen.
Clear that I know that there are protests still happening in major cities across the United States. I'm just not seeing the reporting on it that I had.
That's right.
For the first few weeks.
That's right. But they're not going to stop. They're not going to stop. And this is a movement, I'm telling you. They're not going to stop. And everyone beware, because they're not going to stop. They're not going to stop before Election Day in November, and they're not going to stop after Election Day. And that should be, everyone should take note of that on both levels, that this isn't, they're not going to let up, and they should not. And we should not.
Now, you just heard that from the mouth of Kamala Harris. She is Joe Biden's vice presidential candidate. "America, a nation raised up by the hand of God to spread the gospel and to be a beacon of freedom for people around the world, is about to be forever silenced by those sworn to protect her, her leaders." And you just heard from somebody who wants very, very badly to be vice president. And guess what? If Joe Biden wins, not only will he not serve out the first 4 years, I would wager a bet that they will have him removed before 6 months have gone by. So can you imagine having a president of this country? The indignity and the insult of having our first female president be somebody who hates this country as much as Kamala Harris hates America. Can you imagine what that would be like to have that woman who has repeated over and over and over that she supports Black Lives Matter, the riots are not going to stop, don't expect them to stop, she supports it, she encourages it. Can you imagine what life would be like in this country if she was the president of the United States? Somebody who signs off 100% on a socialist, Marxist, communist agenda? Well, that's what happens if you vote for Joe Biden. You're going to get President Kamala Harris, and you really need to think about that. And you really need to think about if that's the type of president that you want. Do you like the riots? Do you enjoy watching videos of people like street preacher Sam Bathia? Black man, doused in flour, covered in silly string, while they chant F Jesus and F your Jesus? Because that's the type of America that we're going to get if Joe Biden becomes president. Now, listen to this clip. Mark Levin talking about very rationally and intellectually. Mark Levin, Black Lives Matter is a Marxist anarchist movement, and they admit it. Take a listen to this.
This is very, very important. One of the co-founders of Black Lives Matter, her name is Patrice Cullor, C-U-L-L-O-R-S, I believe that's how you pronounce it. She, and I've told you that this is a Marxist, anarchist, anti-Semitic group, and that is exactly what it is. And so when people say, I stand with Black Lives Matter, or the mayor, Bowser of Washington, D.C., has that painted in massive way on a street where you can see it from space across from the White House. When these politicians are embracing now Black Lives Matter, I'm not talking about lowercase b, lowercase l, lowercase m. I'm talking about Black Lives Matter, the organization. They're embracing a Marxist anarchist organization that is extremely well-funded, heavily funded, and extremely well-organized all over the country. And it's almost like the Weather Underground, except smartly what they've embraced is race as the issue through which to push their Marxism. And Marx says, do it any way you have to. It's why you see the environmental movement in many ways also borrows from Marx. The immigration movement also borrows from Marx. But in this case, these are trained Marxists, as she's about to tell you, and they are using race, basically, as a vessel through which to advance a Marxist revolution. They're for revolution. All right, let's take a look. Go.
I also think that it might... I think of a lot of things. The first thing I think is that we actually do have an ideological frame. Myself and Alicia in particular are trained organizers. We are trained Marxists.
That woman, Patricia Cullors, is one of the co-founders of Black Lives Matter, and she is telling you that her and her two other co-founders are trained Marxist agitators. Okay, so when we say that the Black Lives Matter movement is a Marxist anarchist movement, that is something that the movement itself admits to. You just heard the founder of Black Lives Matter say that she and her other two founder buddies are trained Marxists.
We are trained Marxists. We're trained Marxists. So what I've been saying, probably for years now, is true. They're not hiding it. It used to be part of their mission statement. Their anti-Semitism, the BDS, they're not hiding it. Israel's an apartheid society. They're not hiding these things. Go.
We are super versed on sort of ideological theories, and I think that what we really try to do is build a movement that could be utilized by many, many black folk.
We're building a movement that can be used by many black folk, but it's not just for black folk. They're building a Marxist movement within the United States, and they are succeeding because of all the efforts of people to project their own attitudes and their own interests on top of it. Some of them are doing it unwittingly, but some are not.
And that's really the main point that I want to get across today, is that the Black Lives Matter and Antifa Marxist movements are succeeding. They are gaining incredible ground. Every time that you go to YouTube and you see a video where some city has taken an entire city street and they have spray-painted Black Lives Matter in enormous letters that can be viewed from the International Space Station from outer space. The letters are so big. And that's happening in just about every major city in America. That really should be bothering you. Because I think we're successfully making the case that Black Lives Matter as a movement and Antifa as a movement are Marxist anarchists. And they are trying to bring in communism is what they're trying to do. And they have made so much progress in just 2020 by itself. It is astonishing how much progress that they've made. Listen to this. Portland mayoral candidate Sarah Iannarone, talking about how she wants to be elected as Portland's mayor as the Antifa candidate. Listen to this.
Now, while Antifa doesn't have a leader like Joey Gibson, it does have some supporters in high places, including Portland mayoral candidate Sarah Iannarone. During my interview with her yesterday, I read her some of the questions that I've been getting from viewers about how far her support for Antifa goes.
I'm going to refer to some comments here from Facebook, and I'm also going to put a little asterisk. These are not comments from Facebook are not where anybody should go for the specific definitions of how the world works. But these are comments that have been posted under things you have said specifically on your Facebook page, things that have been said on mine, as I mentioned that I was interviewing you today, things that people have written on other interviews you have done from various media outlets here in Portland. And I want to read them because they always kind of fit the same narrative. And this isn't accusatory at all, but I think that you should respond to them considering I read it so often. And I just kind of want people to be able to hear what you have to say about it and be able to put it to bed here. So Tony White said, in an earlier interview, she, as in you, said that she wasn't the person lighting the fires and wouldn't condemn them. Really? Question mark. Then Raymond Saperstein said, I have read that she is 100% Antifa. Linda Troop wrote, what is your association with the Antifa movement? And I'm going to read between the lines a little bit on those. I don't think that they're describing the simple stance against fascism, which is something that I think we should all endorse, but rather the people who are setting the fires, brawling in the streets with the Proud Boys, and committing other types of violent acts. Can you speak at all to these comments that I've seen time and time again under anything you say online?
Thanks for the opportunity to do that. If I try to reply to them all individually, it would take me months, if not years. I condemn violence. I believe that violence is bad no matter who's doing it. And what I said was I understand that the people perpetrating that were angry and rightfully so, and that I also saw that the Portland police were engaged in their own violence. But let's talk about Antifa sometimes, because I have said that I am anti-fascist, but I don't want to undermine the fact that we have a bumper sticker on my campaign that says every day anti-fascist always. If you talk to our elders who were there for World War II, fascism is bad. I mean, being opposed to fascism should not be something that people shy away from in 2020.
So let's take her argument for a moment. She says that she supports Antifa because they are an anti-fascist movement. And yet, Antifa carries clubs and sticks and knives and guns. They proudly wave the red and black Nazi colors of Nazi Germany from 1933 on their flags. Antifa was started in Nazi Germany by Nazis. And that's where the Antifa movement comes from. So, the Nazis were fascists. And in order to get their point across, in order to make progress, what did they do? Hitler would have his brown shirts, and they wore their uniform, and they carried their banners, and they carried their flags, and they marched in the streets by the tens of thousands. Now, why would they do that? To intimidate people. To make people think that there's no way that you can overturn these people. And they claimed control of the entire state nation state of the nation of Germany. Now, I want you to think about that for a second. Adolf Hitler joined the National Socialist Workers' Party in 1920. And in 13 years, his party, the Brown Shirts, his thugs, were more in number than the entire combined might of the German military. Now, I want you to really, really think about that. In 13 years, Adolf Hitler was able to raise a personal army of his thugs who swore to fight to the death to protect Adolf Hitler. These people were so nasty that when Adolf Hitler finally became dictator in 1935, he began to outlaw the Brown Shirts because even he was afraid that he wouldn't be able to effectively control those people. So they kind of migrated from being this renegade group to being the Secret Service, which really wasn't much better, but he was able to control them a lot more successfully. But I want you to realize that Adolf Hitler, in 13 short years, was able to raise up an army of agitators that were more in number than the entire German military, and he was able to take control of the entire country. That happened. That is what we learn in school when they teach you about World War II and the Greatest Generation. My father was part of the Greatest Generation. But do you see what I'm saying? Adolf Hitler was able to take complete control of an entire nation in 13 years with his own handmade army. And that's exactly what Antifa is doing today. And you hear this woman, this absolutely clueless liberal, saying that the reason why she supports Antifa is because she's against fascism. That is an absolutely asinine statement to make when you consider that Antifa are fascists.
When we look at Trump sending unaccountable forces here who were scooping up people into vans, that is something to be scared of. And so when I say something like everyday anti-fascist, what that means to me is that every person should come together to oppose bigotry and hate and exclusion and violence in our city.
Now, I agree. People should come together and stand against hatred and bigotry and violence and all those things. Absolutely. There's not a Bible-believing Christian on the face of this earth that wouldn't agree that we need to stand together against hatred and bigotry and violence. That's just common sense and trying to live in a decent society. But what she doesn't say is that the methods that Antifa uses are violent, bigot methods that have already killed 13 people and have wounded hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of other people, put people into comas as they prowl the streets with black hoods and black capes and black hoodies and sticks and clubs and guns and rocks and proudly waving the black and red Nazi colors of Nazi Germany. So that woman says that she is going to be the Antifa candidate for Portland, Oregon. She wants to be the mayor that represents the Antifa Party. Now, do you see where all this is going? This is exactly what Adolf Hitler did back in the 1920s. They even put Adolf Hitler in jail for 9 months back in 1925 because he was deemed to be such a threat to the country. And he spent 9 months in jail. But they didn't go far enough because when they let him back out, he simply went back to what he was doing before. The German people didn't take him seriously. Go back and watch any of the movies from the mid to late 1930s, early 1940s from Hollywood. And they make fun of Adolf Hitler. They call him the funny little man with the funny little mustache. And that man almost brought the world to its knees. He came very, very close to winning World War II. And he was absolutely a type of Antichrist. But when you look at the end of Adolf Hitler, and you look at the concentration camps, and you look at the 12 million people, 6 million of which were Jews, who died in the ovens and in the gas chambers. When you look at the 12 million people that Adolf Hitler killed in the concentration camps, when you look at the 55 million people that died in World War II trying to stop this horror from taking over the entire world, and then you realize that it started from one skinny little man who walks into a beer hall and listens to some rabble-rousers, and the spirit of Satan enters into him, and he thinks, wait a second, if I could take all of these rabble-rousers, if I could take all of these people who are unhappy, and if I could find some way to unite them, man, oh man, you know what I would have? I would have an army. And that's exactly what he did. Nobody took him seriously. Nobody, except that one time when they put him in jail, nobody made any real attempts to try and stop him. And with each passing year, he got stronger and stronger and stronger and richer and wealthier and more powerful. So when I tell you that in the last 5 months, Antifa and Black Lives Matter have received nearly $1 billion in donations, that should terrify you. If it doesn't, you're either sound asleep or you're one of them. Because this is exactly how Adolf Hitler started. Don't look at the end of it when he's controlling all of Germany and he's invading Czechoslovakia and Poland and France and doing all this wacky, crazy stuff. What I want you to look at is how he started. And if we were on the timeline, if 1933 is when he becomes chancellor, and 1920 is when he steps foot into the beer hall for the very first time, so you have 1920 to 1933, and if I was to pick a spot on that timeline where we are right now with Black Lives Matter and Antifa, I would say that we're right about 1931. That's how close that we are to having these people take over everything. Now, if you're happy with that, if you're willing to live in a country where New York City, Philadelphia, Seattle, Portland, Detroit, Chicago, if you're willing to live in a country that has major cities that are so unsafe that even the police won't go into some of these sections, and all the major businesses are covered up with plywood as they are right now. This is not months ago. This is not. No major city has started to rebuild, and no major city has started to remove the plywood. I told you that I saw that video with Steven Crowder and Alex Jones, and they were walking through Alex Jones' hometown of Austin, Texas, and they were talking about how Austin, Texas, just a couple of years ago, it was one of the music capitals of America, and it rivaled Nashville, Tennessee, and everybody wanted to go to Austin, and everybody wanted to be part of the scene, and they had all these hipster coffee bars and these great food places and all this craft stuff that they were creating. No more. Austin, Texas looks like a third world country. And I watched this video with Crowder and Jones, and they walked block after block. They must have walked a 10-block radius in downtown Austin, Texas. This is last week. And every single store except for every once in a while, a hamburger place was trying to serve burgers and stay in business. But with the exception of that, Austin, Texas is a burned out battle zone. Now, I want you to think about Adolf Hitler, and I want you to think about when he started in 1920, and I want you to think about when he became chancellor in 1933, and then when he became dictator legally in 1935. We are right around 1931, almost at 1932. If the current situation does not change, if somebody doesn't step up and do something, I'm telling you, as sure as I'm sitting here, and as sure as you're listening to me right now, those people are going to win. If they're not stopped, because they are rapidly approaching a critical mass situation. And here's what I mean by critical mass. There was a day when Bill Gates didn't have much money. He was raised in a very wealthy household, and his parents paid all of his bills. But there was a day when he started Microsoft, where they used to say that they were so broke as a company that all they ate was pizza and Doritos and Pepsi or something like that. They didn't have any money. And then his mother pulled the strings with IBM, and the CEO took little Billy Gates under his wing, and in a matter of less than 2 years, he becomes one of the youngest billionaires in world history. And it reached the success of his company once the right factors were put in place. He went from being this tiny, nothing little company that had literally no chance of success, and you blink your eyes, and he is the youngest billionaire ever, and here we are 40 years later, and he is still fabulously wealthy and much more powerful than he was 40 years ago. And what happened is that his efforts reached a critical mass situation, and then they began to multiply, and then the multiplication multiplied, and then the multiplied multiplication multiplied. And when that happens, in any walk of life, when you reach a critical mass situation, it becomes virtually unstoppable. My dad used to tell me that in America's public schools, they will never teach how close America really came to losing World War II. Now, so much of it, when you talk about D-Day and landing on the beach at Normandy and all that great stuff, that's become like a fable now. That's become like mythology and the all-powerful American army. But back in 1945, my dad told me that if one or two things had not happened, we would have lost that war and Adolf Hitler and the Nazis would have won. Because Adolf Hitler reached critical mass. He had all the money he needed. He had all the military might that he needed. He began to roll into country after country after country, and he became virtually unstoppable. And then he went from being the man that everybody made fun of to the very personification of evil. You show the picture of Adolf Hitler to this day, it sends chills down your spine. And why? He was what, 5'5", 120 pounds? A strong wind could have blown him away. He wasn't physically intimidating to anybody except babies and puppies. But boy, oh boy, when you look in his eyes and you see Satan looking back, and then you realize that that man almost took control of everything. And why? Because people didn't stop him. Now, Robin is asking, if we reach critical mass soon, will there be an election? Great question, Robin, and that brings me to my next point. Robin is asking, if critical mass hits sometime in the next 8 weeks, will we still have an election in America? And that is what they're trying to do right now. And they are trying with all of their might to stop the presidential election. Now, I don't know. It is anybody's guess. I'm not a psychic, obviously, Deuteronomy 13. I'm not a prophet because I live in the church age. But it is very obvious to see that they are pulling out all the stops to try and prevent the election. 6 months ago, they were pulling out the stops to try to prevent a Trump victory. That's changed, and now they're just trying to prevent the election in general. And they are throwing up so many irons into the fire. People don't know, do I go to a polling place? Do I get a mail-in ballot? What's going to happen to that ballot if I mail it in? And confusion is absolutely reigning in America right now. Listen to this article from Breitbart.com. Chuck Schumer backs Bernie Sanders in plan to force Trump from office if he loses. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer tweeted an article from Politico in which Senator Bernie Sanders said that America needed a plan for President Donald Trump's refusal to leave office under the assumption that he loses the election. Schumer said, "This is important. I'm standing side by side with Bernie Sanders to make sure that we have a plan if President Trump refuses to leave office." Now, President Trump has been asked multiple times what he would do should he lose. And he says that he'll be very happy to rejoin public private life. And he'll be very happy to resume his old activities, and he'll find new challenges and things to do. And he is on record as saying that multiple times. And yet, the radical left, they spin conspiracy theory after conspiracy theory, and they are, just like with the Russian collusion, they are creating a situation where they introduce a false narrative, and then they all gather around and they defend the false narrative that they just created. Hillary Clinton is part of this. And she has said repeatedly that we need a plan of what to do if Donald Trump loses and refuses to vacate the White House. And then, with the very same mouth that she said that America needs a plan to deal with what would happen if Donald Trump loses and he refuses to vacate the White House, she then turns around and tells Joe Biden, if you lose, whatever you do, don't concede. Can you see how crazy this is? On one hand, the liberals are accusing Donald Trump that he won't leave if he loses the election. And then on the other hand, they're telling Joe Biden, if you lose, don't leave. Don't concede. Stay in the fight. Fight it every step of the way. Tie it up with lawyers. Now, this is where we're headed. And this is where the battleground is. And where we stand right now, September 7th, 2020, my mom's birthday. She would have been 92 today. Happy birthday, Mom. September 7th, 2020, you have Black Lives Matter, you have Antifa, you have the Sunrise Movement, you have the Democratic Party, you have the Progressive Socialists, you have Ariana Presley, AOC, Rashida Tlaib, Ilhan Omar, Bernie Sanders, Schumer, Schiff, Pelosi. All of these people represent one group. And they are all working on different fronts to accomplish the same agenda. And there's only one question that is left to answer. Will they or will they not achieve critical mass? That's the question that we are asking today. Will they or will they not achieve critical mass? Now take a listen to this. Riots declared in Southeast Portland after 100 nights of protests take place in the city. Listen to this.
Tonight, protesters are back on the streets. You're looking live right now in Southeast Portland from Air 12. Police are trying to keep a group from marching to the East Precinct. We have seen fires and people throwing things at officers. Fox 12's Drew Marine is at tonight's protest and gives us a recap of the events marking 100 days of protests. Drew?
Yeah, Camilla, right now we're in front of Ventura Park where the protesters are regrouping after being dispersed. They originally started here at the park about 300 to 400 people deep. They started to march here on Stark Street, but there was a police line that met them just down the road here, and they would not let anyone through because the plan was they were going to be marching to the East Precinct. And that's when we saw a very dramatic scene. Police were there, like I mentioned, waiting for the protesters and gave several warnings before using pepper balls on the crowd. And in return, protesters used what we saw was three Molotov cocktails thrown and exploded onto the street in front of police.
Yeah, so there you have these peaceful protesters, and all they want to do is they want to protest racial injustice. And what are they doing? They're mobbing, looting, burning, rioting, raping. They're throwing Molotov cocktails at the police. That's the peaceful protesters.
We did see when those Molotov cocktails were thrown, somebody's shoe was caught on fire. They had to stop, drop, and roll in order to try and get that out. They eventually took their shoe off, and volunteer medics helped him out there. And then at that point, police rushed the crowd again, used tear gas. Right now, the group is dispersed into several small groups, and at this point, we're not really sure where they're going. But it was a dramatic scene out there. There was fireworks as well as those Molotov cocktails. Some of those fireworks were set off right in front of us, so close that embers hit my arm. And now, like I mentioned, the group is trying to figure out where they're going to go next because police are trying to prevent them from going to the East Precinct. I've seen at least three arrests so far, and I'm not sure if there's been more, but of course we'll provide updates throughout the night with this group. For now, we're going to see what they do next. Live in Southeast Portland, Drew Marine, Fox 12, Oregon.
Drew, thank you. And we've got another crew in the general area as well, closer to the front end of that group that was moving through Southeast Portland. Fox 12's Bridget Chavez joins us live now. And Bridget, what are you seeing where you are?
Well, we just saw a group being taken down this way on a van. There's a bunch of officers on that van heading down Stark this way. You can see police lights there, too. There's another group of people from that group that was trying to march to the East Precinct as well. They've been dispersing them all night. You can see another Portland police van heading up that street right there, the LRAD right in that area, too. And again, we've just seen pockets of people, maybe groups no larger than 20 to 30 each, and police just trying to disperse these groups, keeping them away from the East Precinct. It looks like, for the most part, a lot of these groups are trying to figure out what they're going to do next because their original plan was to head to the East Precinct. And police did declare a riot a little over an hour ago. Again, they're telling people to stay out of the streets. For the most part, what we're seeing here is people are staying on the sidewalk, but multiple police units in the area. And again, we'll keep you updated as we get more information. Back to you.
And there you have what's happening on the ground in Portland right now. It took them 100 days of rioting for them to actually declare that it was a riot. Now, anybody would have known that by day two or day three or day four. Why does it take 100 days to declare a riot a riot? Well, the reason for that is it's the same reason why nobody stopped Adolf Hitler. and why he was allowed to start the Hitler Youth, and he would start to grow his power base, and he would start and he would recruit groups like the Sunrise Movement. They are recruiting in high schools right now. They're recruiting in college right now. And the Sunrise Movement, as we have told you before, is an absolute Marxist organization on the same page as Black Lives Matter and Antifa. And they're taking care of the young adult market, and they're taking care of the teenage market. And Black Lives Matter is appealing to race-baiting radicals and Antifa. And it's funny because most of Antifa is made up of white people. Most of Black Lives Matter is made up also of white people. If you're looking for something to do the next time it's raining out and you're bored and you don't know what to do, why don't you go to YouTube and start watching videos of Black Lives Matter demonstrations? You will see at least 60% of everybody is a white person. And what's the reason for that? The reason for that is not solidarity with black people. The reason for that is because the majority of people who believe that Marxism, communism, and socialism is a good thing are white people. And that is who ultimately is behind all of this, is rich white people trying to collapse the American system of government and trying to bring in Marxism. And as we said at the start of the program, they have been, so far, they have been very, very successful. And they are accomplishing much more than anybody thought that they would. And just wait until they hit critical mass. When they do that, they will become virtually unstoppable. Now, let me close with this thought. If you're on Instagram, if you're on Facebook, if you're on Twitter, if you're on LinkedIn, have you noticed that over the past couple of months that if you're not on board with Black Lives Matter, other people begin to call you out? I have had family members who support Black Lives Matter call me out for being an intolerant, racist bigot when all I'm doing is trying to stand for Jesus Christ and common sense and the Bible. And have you noticed on social media how people are afraid to stand up and they look at Antifa, they look at Black Lives Matter, and you can clearly see that these are domestic terror organizations. You can see it because they wear hoods. You can see it because they have clubs and sticks and guns and rocks and bricks and knives. You can see it because they beat people up. They swarm on people in packs. And they shout the most vile and disgusting things. They hate America. They hate God. They hate the Bible. They hate Jesus Christ. They hate free speech. And if they get their way, the only speech that will be acceptable is the speech that they say is acceptable. And I recently closed down my Instagram account because it just really became a waste of time. But every time that I would post something about Jesus Christ or the Bible or the American flag or the national anthem, you could just see the number of people who were following me drop by the dozens every time I made a post like that. And if these people reach critical mass, you are going to see something in this country that you thought would never, ever be possible. You're going to see the collapse of the constitutional republic that this country is founded on. Ronald Reagan said this: freedom is never more than one generation away from extinction. We didn't pass it to our children in the bloodstream. It must be fought for, protected, and handed on to them to do the same, or one day we will spend our sunset years telling our children and our children's children what it was once like in the United States when men were free. That is what Ronald Reagan said. Abraham Lincoln said that America could never be destroyed by an outside force. That if America was ever going to come to its end, now he died protecting this republic. They shot him in the head because he tried to stand for freedom. And who was he shot by? John Wilkes Booth. If John Wilkes Booth was alive today, he would be a member of Black Lives Matter. He would be a member of Antifa. Absolutely no question about it. And Abraham Lincoln said, like Ronald Reagan, that America, if it ever comes to an end, will never be destroyed by an opposing army. America will be destroyed from the inside by its own people. The Bible says that a house divided against itself cannot stand. And so this is where we are on this Labor Day of 2020. We are standing on the precipice of history, and it's bad history. And should the Black Lives Matter and the Antifa Marxists and fascists reach critical mass, there'll be no turning back. They will have too much power, too much funding, too much money, too much influence. And the America that we know will come to an end. And with that, we have come to an end on today's broadcast. Thank you so much for tuning in, being a part of today's program. Lord willing, we'll see you back here Wednesday night for another edition of Rightly Dividing, our King James twice a week Bible study. We hope that you'll join us for that. Have a great and safe holiday, everybody.